wonder if you ever thought of that, David, that if they were to actually reveal themselves and then reveal themselves to be our creators, we would have one whale of a new religion that would bring you right to your knees.
Well, there is the case of Zaytun in Egypt in the late 60s, and it also started in the year 2000. BBC and ABC News reported this. There were orbs of light in the sky over Egypt that looked like UFOs, photographed in 1968, accompanied by apparitions of the Virgin Mary that were full-blown visible apparitions. That's at zeytun-eg.org on the Internet. And those photographs were, you know, that made the back pages of the New York Times in the late 60s. 2 million people, according to the BBC, flooded the town of Assiut in the year 2000, and again, these orbs of light are in the sky, and this incredible translucent, luminous body of light of the Virgin Mary appears, and there are documented healings, and Muslims and Christians are all praying together to her, and it was all over the news in England. I mean, I remember it, and I actually wanted to go out there with my video camera and try to film it, but I never could get there. But, and they went on for quite a while, and again, that is UFO phenomena associated with a full-blown apparition of a mystical figure, and that would not be a new religion. That would be kind of a revelation on our existing religion, because a lot of Catholics and Protestants and born-agains don't believe that angels have to travel in light ships or UFOs.
It might be that, David.
It might be that. It's this is a well-documented case.
On the other hand, if they're our creators, that means that with technology, mm-hmm. they created us. And that would be in some conflict with the biblical version.
Well, it would be. You know, if what Zechariah Sitchin says from the Enuma Elish, which predates the book of Genesis, the seven tablets of creation describe demigods and goddesses who collectively created us physically in vitro, in test tubes, and they manipulated DNA. They mixed the DNA of themselves with the evolving Neanderthal species on Earth and co-created the first Adam and Eve, and that's, again, well-documented.
And there you are again, David, with reproductive and genetic stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I mean, it literally could happen that we will have that power ourselves. I mean, all we need is the ability to go interstellar, and if we find a planet that could sustain life with no one living on it, we might start giving birth to a new generation and a new planet, and that generation will look back at us and say we were gods.
Yes, if we don't blow ourselves to smithereens.
If we don't blow ourselves to smithereens first.
And I'd say it's a big race. Listen, let's take some calls. First-time caller line, you're on air with David Sirita. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Mike. Let's just say my name's John Doe. I'm a tech sergeant with the Air Force out of Big Spring, Texas.
Oh.
I don't know if you've heard about it. I currently work at a faculty formerly known as Hangar 18.
Oh.
And our job is basically the craft was too big to move, so we are currently guarding it and keeping it from everybody else.
You claim you're guarding an extraterrestrial craft?
Yes, I am. My CO won't let me. He allowed me to use our phone to call out.
To call a talk show and say, hey, we're guarding an extraterrestrial craft. Your CO approved that?
Unofficially, yes.
Well, your CO has lots of guts, is all I can say. So you claim you're calling from what we know in history as Hangar 18.
That's affirmative.
Okay. It's an opportunity I can't pass up, but what can you tell me, and David, since he's listening, about the nature of the craft that you guard?
The craft is approximately 380 feet long and 287 feet wide. There were 17 bodies originally found on the craft, and, of course, every one of them was deceased. The craft crashed. And the government covered the debt.
And you've been guarding it how long?
I have been in the Air Force for 17 years.
Yes, sir.
And I have been on this project for approximately the last 5.5 years.
5.5 years. David, this is a very unusual opportunity. I mean, what would you say? I mean, here you are, my guest. What do you say to a caller like this?
Well, I try to be 100% open-minded. I would ask him, I'd ask you that, have you seen the craft do anything, or is it dismantled? Does it activate in any kind of a state? Has it anyone done studies into its energy and propulsion system?
As far as I can tell from the propulsion systems, I'm no expert, but from the scientists that I've seen studying it, if you will, they tell me that the propulsion system is dead, that apparently when it crashed it was on its last legs, if you will, and it was more or less, I guess when it entered our atmosphere, it was more or less on its last legs. It, from what I've heard, they said that it was basically a trinium and hydrogen combination that powered it. I'm no scientist, but that's what I overheard them say.
Yeah, that would be quite radioactive. So is there any presence of radioactivity, or is there any...
Well, my current duty station, I'm approximately probably 30 feet from the left rear of the craft, and just from looking at it, I would say there's no radioactiveness left in it. We don't wear no protective suits or anything like that.
What does it look like?
It's kind of, I wouldn't say a triangle. It's kind of like a triangle, but every corner, the three edges are rounded. And there's three big bulges below it on each corner, and a bunch of little bulges in between each corner. And that's the best way I have to describe it.
How many people do you think have knowledge, guards and scientists and others that you've seen, have knowledge of the existence of this craft, where it is?
I would say, like I said, I've been on this project for quite a while, and I would say that on any given day, I'll probably see 200 or 300 people.
My God.
And I would say that there's probably at least a few thousand that know of its existence that I have seen personally.
That you're making this call itself doesn't seem logical. In other words, it's obviously a very secret thing, and here you are, a guard, having talked to his commander, calling a national talk show. How did that come about?
We're pretty, I wouldn't say pretty big fans. We listen to the radio quite a lot here.
Well,
and a lot of times we listen to this show late at night. It's the only thing interested on.
Uh-huh.
My CO, he agreed with me, and he said, hey, other people believe we need to let these people know that there's something out here. This crashed a long time ago. From what I've heard, it crashed in 1958.
Are you and your CO willing to go any further?
We've talked about it, and I don't know about him, but I damn sure am.
You are?
Yes, I am.
Do you know how to get in touch with me?
I have your line that I called on tonight, and that's the only number I've got.
All right. I refer to email.
No, I don't.
You're not able to email?
I can, but I'm kind of afraid to.
Afraid to.
I was more or less told that if I wanted to call in, I'd call in. Who's going to believe me? Nobody else. My CO said, I'll let you make the call. And I have the means to email at my home, but I'm kind of afraid to.
Email a way that you would feel safe in communicating. Just do that much. Go to a library, to a computer, where, a public library or something like that, and fire me an email with a suggestion on how we can exchange information.
Okay.
How about that, all right?
That'll work.
All right.
And I actually have three videotapes that I made
Oh.
And that I, well, I say three. I have one that I have made, and I have two that were given to me with the specs for the craft, and I actually have, the one I have on tape actually has the craft with bodies.
Oh, Sergeant, we really need to talk. We really need to talk. So, Art Bell at mindspring.com or Art Bell at AOL.com. That's my name. You'll not forget that at either one of those two addresses, and we'll take it from there. All right?
Okay. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Sergeant. Take care. You never know, David.
You never know.
You just never know.
And you can't be negative, and you can't be too enthusiastic, but if you're telling the truth, then you might have something there.
Well, maybe it's a good moment to stop and ask you. I mean, we do have Roswell, David, mm-hmm. and you know, other crashes said to have occurred in that area. We have perhaps other crashes we've heard of in South Africa and other locations. Do you believe there is a crash retrieval program? Do you believe we have recovered alien craft?
Oh, I do, and let me tell you about Roswell, because this is a view, you know, once you understand the concept of a craft turning into pure, you know, ultraviolet wavelength energy or higher.
Yes.
Now let's look at Roswell. This is really interesting. Check this theory out. Okay, July 5th, 1945, or it was between the 5th and the 17th, the dates fluctuate, we detonated the first atomic bomb near White Sands, New Mexico. Now, July 7th, 1947, 2 years later, same dates of the year, on either side of the nuclear test site in New Mexico,
yes,
you have the Plains of San Augustine crash, and you have the crash at Roswell.
That's right.
Now, just imagine, visualize this for a moment, audience, that you have craft, just like in the case of Mexico, you have interdimensional craft that are vibrating at very high frequency wavelengths.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a nuclear bomb releases 200 million electron volts of energy with a lot of gamma radiation. Now, if you're pure wavelength craft, that gamma burst, in tremendous gamma burst, is going to upset you. It's in other words, if you're not physical anymore, you're pure wavelength, what you're vulnerable to is something similar to your frequency bursting at you.
Sure.
And you get thrown out on either side of the explosion, one towards Roswell and the other towards the Plains of St. Augustine. And 2 years later, we see the effects, not instantaneously. Now, the question in the theory is, why 2 years later?
Well, there's that, David, and then there's also just the fact that such an explosion would be apparent to anybody who had been observing us at all in any way. That explosion would have been a major bell ringing, indicating a certain major advance event had occurred on Earth. It would be like ringing the great big bell, saying...
Well, they might have been hovering around saying, what are these guys doing with this thing? And a nuclear bomb tears into the fabric of the different dimensions, so it's not just affecting our dimension.
Mm-hmm.
But the curiosity is why July 7th, 1947, and we tested July 5th through the 17th, the date is not clear, 1945, and you get two UFO crashes on either side of the explosion. I mean,
yes.
It's really peculiar.
Well, I don't disagree with you. So in answer to the question, you obviously do believe we have them.
Oh, yeah.
And they're under some kind of guard being held somewhere, and what? Reverse engineered?
I believe Robert Lazar,
I was about to ask
going
about
back
that.
To element 115 and the experiments done at Berkeley, which are very recent, just in the last couple of years, they have finally produced element 115, and it's the formula, the way they did it, I read it, it's almost identical to Lazar's theory. In fact, how could he have been so accurate with a formula that is decades old at this point, And decades later, they duplicate and produce element 115 with the, almost the exact formula that he gave out. Now,
I agree. Incredible. My chin hit my chest when I heard it. I went, oh, my God.
See, now, in my theory, to convert mass into a light, initially you would need a huge burst of energy to affect a great amount of mass.
Yes.
But once that mass is reduced to pure light energy, to maintain it, you need next to no energy. I don't believe they're using energy in the form of propulsion the way we do. They use a huge energy burst to reduce mass by altering the wave state of mass, and I believe they do it similar to the Hutchinson effect. And once that craft or steel of that craft is pure light energy, it takes very tiny amounts of energy of strobing waves to maintain it in that state.
All right, hold tight. Wildcard line, you're on the air with David Sarita. A quick one before the bottom of the hour here.
David, Art, this is Mel in Montana.
Hey, Mel.
How are you? Okay, I love you guys. And obviously, we've both seen that big triangle black craft.
Yes.
And before that, I had a camera in the crop circle, and I took a picture, and I didn't realize later, and I looked at the picture later, it was completely black, and I see a little alien face in it. It looked like a hologram in the side of, you know, it's definitely an alien face. I showed it to everybody, and they go, whoa, that's an alien face.
And you got it. You took a photograph in a crop circle.
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
There have been four crop circles right in my area. And you can really definitely, and it's like a hologram. You can only see it when the sun hits it.
All right. Well, David, let me ask you, crop circles, animal mutilations, the stories we've had of cattle being taken up in beams, all the rest of it, these inexplicable things, particularly crop circles and the mutilations, are you convinced they're connected to alien presence?
Oh, absolutely. I think reading the wave formations in the crop circles, if you look at the spiraling wave and weave of the grass, and you look at the spiraling wave strobing out of the NASA UFO photos, you'll see a remarkable resemblance in the wave patterns in these craft propulsion systems.
And do you believe them to be communicative or what?
Oh, I think there is a blueprint in the crop circles. I think if you run those through, any particle physicist who looked at crop circles would understand what they're doing. That has the signature of mass